Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Adam Barrett. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going, Fred?
Good. I'm glad you could join me again. I've been thinking about a situation, and from our previous couple conversations, we've been talking about different tools and when and why we use particular tools and how deep our toolbox is, those kinds of things. Yet, one way to evaluate that is to have a scenario or a situation, and then how would you solve it?
And I'm looking very forward to this because you have not told me what the situation is going to be. So it almost feels like a game show. You're going to throw something at me and we're going to debate it. So I have no idea what's coming.
Well, I'm also thinking an idea that we could use more often in this show, in the Speaking of Reliability, is if our listeners would send us a synopsis of a situation and then leave it with the question of how would you approach this? That would be an awesome topic here. And it would be, feedback directly to people to how to approach solving problems from a reliability engineer's point of view. How would you go about improving a system or solving an issue or addressing a field problem or whatever it is? And I think those could make some very interesting circumstances. So we'll see. So some years ago, I was approached by a client that wanted to know, they had a problem. The product they made was to help people sleep. So its primary function was a sleep aid, and it had a motor in it, and it was a fan. It was a treatment, if I remember correctly, for sleep apnea. And this is a long time ago, but the product would, over, say, 6 months or so, would create a peculiar sound that was annoying. So it wasn't loud. It wasn't like a screeching fingernails on a chalkboard, cringe-worthy type sounds or a car crash sound or glass breaking sound or anything like that. It was almost like a mosquito buzz, but it was enough of an annoying sound that it defeated its primary purpose of helping people sleep. So it was getting returned fairly regularly after about 6 months. And so we have this sound being emanated from this system. It had basically a blower fan and electronics and a handful of other things. But that was the field problem. And so they had tried, I think, 5 or 6 different ways to solve that. But they were stuck with being able to evaluate which one to use, how to know if it's going to work or not. And so that's when I got involved and we thought about it. So that's the presenting problem. What other information would you need to know to help solve this?
What other information, or what's the first tool I would apply?
Yeah, what would you do? How would you help this team? How would you direct them to solve it?
Well, you just listed one of the two examples I gave that would, in my mind, trigger a fault tree analysis. It's funny, we were talking in previous episodes about how rarely we use fault tree analysis. Mm-hmm. But, for fault tree analysis, the two most common triggers, I think, are you've done an FMEA and you have a very highly critical failure mode that you want to focus on, and you have to decide, do you want to do a design of experiments on it? Do you want to do a fault tree analysis? But something to better understand it. Mm-hmm. The other time that I'm pretty quick to look at a fault tree analysis to, get us further is you have a very specific failure mode that you've experienced in the field and you want to understand why it's happening, and if with the hope that understanding why it's happening is very good design input for improving it. Mm-hmm. So I would see a possible sequence here of you get the team to do a fault tree analysis, which will list the root causes and combination of events or, root causes that will likely yield this. Then you could do a design of experiment experiments with the selected root causes and get a better, you know, validate whether or not your hypothesis that these root causes actually are driving the issue. And I believe at that point, you know, you'd have some very good design input because you would now have confirmed root causes that, you know, that cause that. Mm-hmm. I would also advise immediately doing accelerated life testing. Accelerated life testing, I think, is very effective if you know you have a wear out type failure mode, so a progressing predictable failure mode, and you are, you know, looking to define the relationship between stresses and that wear out predictable failure mode happening. Mm-hmm. So accelerated life testing would be another one to get going, because if you can replicate it consistently, then you've correctly accelerated the right factor.
Right. I think that was, there's two things that this team tried. Was one was just the teardowns and root cause analysis. They were looking for sources of the sound, and they found corrosion. They found components had changed dimensions. They had found deformations in fans. They found buildup of debris and contaminants that changed dimensions internally. But none of which, I mean, it was very, very difficult to measure exactly where this sound came from. And it might have come from just the sound chamber itself, right? Which is, where exactly is this coming from? And so they tried the root cause analysis and teardowns and stuff. And so that probably fed into, would feed into a fault tree analysis kind of approach, because there was a lot of brainstorming as to, well, what could cause this? What are all the various ways that you can create this frequency of sound? You know, so it was, all kinds of variations that they had. The accelerated testing, though, was, well, what are we going to stress it with? Right? So the fault tree would organize the potential causes, and some of which you could probably evaluate whether they were present in the failed products or not. So like corrosion was a primary one on the motor. The bearings would corrode. And they saw some deterioration in the bearings, and they thought, well, that's the moving part. It's got, we think it's about the right frequency, that the rate of interaction of the bearings to the chase, the race way and the rotation it's getting would do it. But then we stopped. We went right back to a brainstorm and said, what else could cause this failure? So it's kind of that step of a fault tree. And they ended up with, I don't know, 35 or so different potential causes.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a big design of experiments. And we needed to do accelerated testing because we knew that it didn't manifest itself until 6 months of normal use. But we also didn't know what stresses to apply. And so like that made it a fairly complex. But we ended up doing a down select just on engineering judgment and got it down to 7 variables that the engineering team thought would be the appropriate, most likely things to occur. And we ended up with 6 that everybody agreed on, though those are the corrosion issue and a couple others. One guy was dead set that was the issue, and we just needed to change the nature of the bearings and you sealed bearings versus the other ones, and it solved the problem. And we talked, the team got one extra thing to throw in, and we threw in that the stators on the motors were stamped and not welded. Mm-hmm. So the little plates that were in the windings of the motor were just kind of had little detents in them that would help them stay in place. And so one theory of one of the mechanical engineers was, well, what if those come loose? The electrical forces would cause a vibration in those stators, and that could be the source of the sound. And everybody was like, nah, that never happens. Nah, they can't come. The motor vendor, we talked to them, and said, nah, they never do that. They're wound tight, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know where the end of the story is it was those stators,
right,
that were vibrating.
Right.
But the trick was then we had all these factors that we had in there. So we designed it was a temperature and humidity while the system is running 24/7. So instead of just 8 hours a day, we ran it 24 hours a day. So 3x acceleration Plus, we increase the temperature because most, not all, of the failure mechanisms would see a benefit from accelerating it. And so we took kind of the threshold, which would give us at least 6 months, and use that as a part of the design. And then it was kind of a hope and a prayer. We also knew the humidity was important because of the corrosion. And then pulled out samples and put them in an anechoic chamber and listened for this particular type of sound to appear. And make a long story short is the only thing we didn't do was the fault tree analysis, but I think we did a poor man's version of it. We didn't map it out and draw it out. We did more of a brainstorm of all the initiating events that would have led to that scenario. I think it would have been beneficial. So I can't disagree with you there. The team had done, and we did more of the root cause analysis, is we purposely took new machines and put corroded bearings from old failed machines in them, rebuilt it, and we couldn't get the sound to come out. So we couldn't reproduce the problem with that particular scenario. Yet this one engineer swore up and down that that was the issue, and we just weren't listening hard enough. So it ended up in the final design. I think they took the motors and sent them back to the vendor as a common root cause approach. That didn't yield anything. They said, well, no, our motors don't make sounds like that, basically, and on and on and on. But it was a fun project because it used a handful of tools. We did accelerated degradation as the for each of the different configurations for design of experiments for these seven different variables we had. And it resolved itself fairly dominantly that it was the stators was the issue. And I still remember a phone call late on a Friday where this technician was building the test units for us. And he was like, you want me to put these corroded bearings in this new system?
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
Here's why. But it was, it ended up just being just a dominant issue was these one particular variable that we just happened to throw in there. I think we would have had a completely different result if we had picked something else that also wasn't part of the problem. At which point then I think the more detailed fault tree analysis would have been a good way to start. So in hindsight, it would have been good.
What's interesting is you reminded me of a specific case I had that actually was similar in a lot of ways, but it's interesting to listen to the approach you did with it, and the approach that I did with mine was a very different direction. It was a tabletop conference system, so speakers, microphone, video, and they were getting a frequency noise within certain ranges, and they couldn't figure out what it was. So, I took the project to help just solve this very specific noise issue, similar to yours. Mm-hmm. Where I decided to start because I was having a difficult time getting their engineering team to kind of want to be a part of this. They kind of wanted to hand it off to a reliability engineer. And so
it's a failure. It's your fault. You fix it.
Well, I mean, I was consulting for them. So they, they looked outside what I chose to do, not having, a lot of access to the design history of it, is I started to do specialized testing. I put it on an electrodynamic table. So that's a vibration table where you can control the frequency and direction of vibration very, very accurately. And I did a decomposition of the system and vibration profiling. So what I did was I started off vibrating the entire thing, and I kept breaking it down to submodules and vibrating it. And I then began to change the variability of how the modules interacted with each other or the parts came together. And
you're talking about the mechanical interactions or the electrical?
The mechanical, okay. All the mechanical systems, because it was clearly a mechanical response that was happening. It happened in some units. It didn't happen in others. They couldn't figure out where their response came from. And what I ended up finally finding was if you had any variability in the heat stakes of the plastic parts, a heat stake is when you have a protrusion, on one part and a hole in another, and you put them together and then melt the protrusion around the other one. So it's a plastic rivet, basically. Mm-hmm. if you had any variation in that, there was a certain set of parts that would catch a natural frequency and do that. But it was very hard to find because
everything's blind at that point. Once you and it's soft material, so doing an X-ray or
exactly,
you know, cross-sectioning it, you probably destroy it.
And everyone's going to behave different. It depends how consistent the heat stake was, and it also depends how, even with all, if they were all good, perfect heat stakes, it depends how much got banged up before it got used. Even just in shipping would change it, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was like having a tuned instrument that you banged around, and it would change. So it was really interesting to keep paring it down to different areas of the natural frequency till I finally got to that, and I was like, I wonder if these parts aren't together the same way. So I actually got them as semi-parts that weren't heat staked yet, just individual parts.
Right.
And I taped them together with different strengths of pulling the tape tight until mm-hmm. I was able to recreate it. So it's kind of interesting. You went with very analytical, you know, and the engineering knowledge on it. And in this other case, based on the resource, you know, I went with specialized testing, you know, and in the end, you know, we both found the root cause, actually, interestingly enough, being two parts coming together and, you know, and how tight they're together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I wonder, I don't know that one is better than the other approach. I think as long as we get to a solution, it's fine. What's the most efficient though? Would you head to the lab and start, as Adam did, tinker around and you know, break it down and break it down and break it down and looking to replicate the issue, I think it's part of the root cause analysis process also, is to, can you replicate the issue and turn it on and off essentially? But you ended up with lots of variables. There's different boards, different attachments, different different loadings on the different boards. Do you think you were lucky that you found it?
There always is, you know, a component of luck. If I had to answer your question of which was a better approach, your approach is a much more thorough approach, much more likely to find it, because you're starting by, you know, that kind of collecting all the engineering knowledge of the team. So that would have been my preference.
We ended up getting lucky by throwing it. We had one extra slot in the array, so we added the one that ended up being the solution. We could have easily not picked that.
Yeah, I mean, I could have just as easy. I'm trying to picture a point where I would have not, because I was, you know, very analytically parsing it down and focusing in. And I guess I could have not found it if the units I had all were very tightly heat staked.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have not, you know, I might have missed it then if they all had been, let's say, on the extreme of the distribution of being really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And because then my option would have been to, you know, I either break them open as individual pieces and look for their natural frequencies, or they're together and they don't have it. It wasn't until they were loosely together that they did. And, you know, it was pretty likely I would find that, because they obviously had a problem with not getting really tight heat stakes. So just me fiddling with it and taking apart and everything, I probably kind of naturally loosened it to that same degree it would get in, you know, a kind of rough usage in its life, you know, during mm-hmm. its life. So, mm-hmm. So I guess as long as I was analytical and kind of logical sequence and focused, I was kind of not knowingly recreating the conditions that did it, which was loosening the heat stakes by handling it.
Isn't that how most Nobel Prizes come about?
Yeah, it's an accident. right, exactly. How many inventions do we have that somebody was trying to invent something else and came up with the secondary thing that turned out to be the really significant invention, right?
Well, it's true. But when we're working on trying to solve an engineering problem or a field failure type problem, it's being willing to see past what you think is the problem. I think that's, we both ended up using these different tools to do, or different approaches, is that we were not fixed on this is the problem and we're going to go fix that and you're good. You didn't jump to a conclusion. In different ways, we did an exploratory set of experiments to figure out, well, what really was the root cause? What really was the problem? And let's go fix that then.
Actually, you bring up an interesting point because, like you experienced, if I had been sitting with the engineers and I talked about, well, what if the heat stakes weren't tight? The guy who was in charge of the heat stakes, you know, the plastic molding, all that would have been like, no, that's impossible. I've never heard it. You know, like the same way you heard from them saying, you know, it's impossible. The, you know, the stator plate can't come loose. And so almost my being removed from the team and my ignorance and my interest in learning about it by dissecting it, might have given me a better shot of finding it, where that, as you experienced, some resistance from the team to redirect because of defensiveness. So,
yeah. And I think every situation we get is, you know, and here we outline four tools really quickly that, or five different, or two different approaches, but basically using a bit of brainstorming, fault tree analysis, what could go wrong, a bit of root cause analysis. Can we replicate this issue or not? Can we show that it caught this particular feature or failure causes the problem? Set of experiments and step-by-step processes to analytically take a look at and make those measurements. I needed to use accelerated testing because of the onset mechanism took time to manifest itself. But we were kind of blind. It was, I don't know that we needed the accelerated testing for the actual problem that occurred, but I think that the thermal cycling that it saw coming in out of testing let the, and the amount of usage time gave it just enough accelerated motion on those stators that they broke them loose, and then it caused the problem. We got lucky that our accelerated testing caused that problem to show itself.
Right.
So sometimes it's luck. Sometimes you're a genius. It's hard to tell the difference.
It depends how you sell it, right?
That's right.
After you find it.
Well, I mean, there's two scenarios, and we both came up with unique ways to do it. And it's within the constraints of the what we're presented with and what we can work with and deal with. There's a lot of problems out there, and some of them are pretty tough and gnarly, and some are just puzzling. I think they would make for some future episodes that would be pretty cool. So if you as a listener have got one of these issues, or you'd like to see how we would approach a problem that you've probably may have solved in the past, and let us know. Head over to reliability.fm. And under the Speaking of Reliability show, you can find ways to leave comments or get in touch with us. We'd love to hear about it, these different scenarios and approaches to solve problems, and it may make an interesting future topic for something that neither of us have actually worked on to say, well, here's how I would approach it. And then we remember the Car Talk show? Didn't they have Stump the Chumps episodes features? And they'd bring back somebody saying, well, did it work out? We could say, here's what we think it would do, and we could bring back the person that brought it to us and say, well, how did it actually turn out?
I think we need to expand to having live call-in like they did.
That would be, I think the logistics would be, but we could probably arrange it for bring back a person, and see how it works. Oh, cool. We'll have to think about that. Maybe in the next 100 episodes, we'll figure out how to do that.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Adam. Interesting problem. And it's interesting they were both sound related, which they are tough problems sometimes.
Well, those are the hard ones to find, right? It's a very small motion somewhere, and that's tricky.
It is. All right. Well, congratulations on solving the heat stake problem. That's cool. So anyway, let us know. And if you've got a situation or a problem, or leave us a rating and review on iTunes, that would be much appreciated also. So until next time, hey, thanks, Adam.
Hey, you're welcome, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.